£1,000 worth of savings. BBC News.
With Tom Sanders. The Pope has warned that artificial intelligence threatens the dignity of the human person. In tonight's Moral Maze, Michael Burke will be chairing a debate on what makes us human. That's at 8 o'clock here on Radio 4. There's another chance to hear Ivo Graham's obsessions in a moment, but first a look ahead to tomorrow's 6:30 comedy.
Welcome to Why Would I Lie Though, the paranormal podcast that asks, why would they lie though?
Brand new comedy from BBC Radio 4.
We've been working as goldfish obedience trainers for, 15 years now.
Bring your tank around the cones, up the seesaw! Master, what are you, a starfish?
Showcasing the best online comedy talent with the biggest following.
Excuse me, but do you mind if I interject?
Suit yourself, love, but it's a zero drugs policy in here.
The new series of POV starts on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds tomorrow night at 6:30.
And now on Radio 4.
Hello, this is Ivo Graham's Obsessions. When Calvin Klein was launching his Obsession perfume in 1985, he said he wanted something sensuous and provocative. When Radio 4 were choosing their new Obsessions host, they said they wanted someone affordable and desperate. It's an absolute honour to have got the call. Now, as the father of a 5-year-old daughter, one of the newer obsessions in my life is, of course, the Disney film Frozen. And this year marks a decade since Let It Go won Best Original Song at the Oscars, and John Travolta introduced singer Idina Menzel in this iconic fashion.
The wickedly talented one and only Adele Dazeem.
Amazing work there from John Travolta. This was the making of Idina Menzel, but sadly it did ruin John Travolta's chances of ever reading out the football scores on 5 Live. He just couldn't be trusted not to claim Shuffled Wings Day has lost 2-0 to Backburn Ravers. Now, we're on the verge of welcoming our two obsessed guests to the stage, but I should say we also have multiple obsessives here in the audience tonight. Yes, they've left their metal detectors, stamp collections and life-size papier-mâché effigies of Olivia Rodrigo at home, and they're here to share their obsessions with us later in the show. Plus, we'll have this week's VOP, very obsessed person, who'll be telling us all about their own thrilling-slash-life-ruining fixation. And if, like me, your personal obsession is format points, well, at the end of the show, I'll be awarding someone in the audience the title of Obsessive of the Week and gifting them a charming Obsessions-branded baseball cap. The Obsessive of the Week will also be invited to read the credits, which is surely a massive risk after such a long chat about mispronouncing names. Time now to welcome my guests. John Travolta might call them Slump Panda and Billy Woggle, but I know them as Sue Pollard and Phil Wang. Give it up for Sue. Phil and Sue, welcome to Obsessions. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Before we get on to your obsessions, is there anything that you're particularly ambivalent about?
I suppose sport.
Mm.
Gasp of surprise from the audience there. I've just never got the importance of what happens at the end. I can sort of appreciate the aesthetic of it, but they just keep going. And I think at some point in my childhood, I was under the misapprehension that we would eventually decide who was best. No. But it doesn't. It just keeps going again and again. And every year, people seem to forget this. You watch the end of the Premier League, the finale, final?
The finale. Everyone calls it the finale.
Act 3. And, you know, Liverpool will lift a trophy and they go, oh, yeah, we did it, we're the best, we're the best. And then a few months later, everyone goes, but are we sure?
I'm mostly ambivalent about coffee. I mean, what's the obsession about coffee? Oh, I've got to have it in a cafetiere. Can you, I can't even spell it. Cafetiere. Who knows what the hell that is? I just have it in a cup if there's nothing else going. I like Yorkshire tea. And now, if anybody's listening from the great Yorkshire tea at showroom, are you still doing the 1,000 in a bag for £12? I live in. So if anybody.
I have to say so, and I mean this in the best possible way. You don't sound like someone who doesn't like coffee.
Anyway, moving swiftly on.
Oh, thanks very much, Sue. I mean, it says here, I can see why they didn't commission Ivo Graham's ambivalences, but I think we'd have got a pretty good half hour out of that. Phil, what obsession have you brought with you to us today?
Today, the obsession of mine that I've brought here is the crooners and sort of the golden age of jazz and swing. Mm. I became obsessed with the crooners. So we're talking Frank Sinatra, Billie Holiday, Ella Fitzgerald, Nat King Cole, that sort of gang of folks, and that sort of period of time. I became obsessed with them in my early teens.
Your classic early teens obsession.
Yeah, I've not really gone through the pathology of how that happened. I was weird, I guess, would be the primary reason. I grew up in Borneo. My father was really into golden oldies, and so that was the first music I listened to. And then I think I sort of maybe internalized the idea that that good music was done by dead people.
Right.
And if they were still alive, they still hadn't really figured it out. And I would honestly wait for people to die to listen to them. I wouldn't. Also, I was in Borneo.
Yes.
There was no concept of, oh, that person might come here to perform, making them feel more alive. Eminem was as likely to come to Borneo as Elvis. So I was like, they were all as good as dead, really.
And I have watched living artists live with you, and you have watched them with a sort of glazed look.
Well, I think I'm dead. Yeah. I think we're in sort of a purgatory.
Did you sing any crooners yourself?
Well, I really loved singing as a young teenage boy. And I loved the sound of the crooners' voices, and I loved how melodic it was, and I loved the poetry of the lyrics and the old-timey feel and the crackle of like an old record and stuff. And I did sing with the school band, Jeorodong International School Orchestra. And I became known as like the school sort of singer. And I put on a little suit and I go on stage.
Is this when you were Mr. Banks?
Yes, it was a Borneo production of Mary Poppins.
Yeah. Mary Poppins in Borneo.
I know. Looking at the photos now, it looks mad. But at the time, it was fantastic. It's a fantastic production.
Will you describe yourself as looking like a cross between a geisha and a darts player?
Yes, I was quite a round guy.
Can I ask who your favourite crooner is? And how many pregnancies were they responsible for back in the day?
Oh, it would have been a lot. I mean, the older I've gotten, the more dark and underbelly it turns out that whole scene hid. But Dean Martin, probably. Nat King Cole, also, and Andy Williams. Actually, they're all brilliant. Ella Fitzgerald.
There are lovely purrs of approval around the audience. You've said before that you one day hope to release an album of swing music yourself.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Loads of guys do it.
What? Who's your favourite?
Loads of guys do it.
Christmas album, Sue.
Yeah, because, I mean, great friend Bradley, look at that. He did a fantastic Christmas album.
Oh, Bradley Walsh.
It was really excellent.
Not Wiggins.
Oh. No, he's what? Probably... He probably speaks what? At the other end, though, you see, doesn't he, with his bike?
He speaks at the other end!
No, but you know what I mean. But I think you should do it. Go on, give us a bit now. Give us a bit of crooning now.
No, it's so embarrassing.
Go on, we'll all close our eyes and pretend that you're not there.
Yes, Sue, he's given us...
Why don't you do... Strangers in my tights. You know, strangers in the night.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what they sing, you know, when you're doing something like a panto, Robin Hood. Strangers in my time. What else? Go on, sing us a bit.
Well, this is fun about the strangers in the night. The end, Frank Sinatra, in his recording, finishes by scatting. Which is an improvised singing technique.
Yes, not, I'm glad you explained.
Yeah, not speaking from the other
end. It's gone full Wiggins.
But at the end of the Strangers of the Night, part of his scat, he goes Scooby Dooby Doo 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 Dee Da, and that is why Scooby Doo is called Scooby Doo. They took it from that little bit of scat.
I think that's great. I never knew that.
Well, Phil, thank you very much for charming us and educating us. And we move now to a game to find out how obsessed you really are with crooners of time gone by. We're going to play a game called You Make Me Feel So Young. Now, we've taken songs from the Great American Songbook and we've fast-forwarded them to the modern day. So can you identify the song title after it's been updated for the 21st century?
Wow, OK.
So, Come Fly With Me becomes Welcome aboard this Ryanair to Corfu. If you're right, you will hear this noise.
Yes, sir, that's my baby.
If you're wrong, you'll hear the more disapproving...
No, sir, I don't mean maybe.
So, question one, what song has been dragged kicking and screaming into the present day here? This song was sung by Barbara Streisand, and we've updated it to Why Did I Swipe Right?
What Now, My Love?
No, sir, I don't mean maybe.
The correct answer is Why Did I Choose You? quite hard. Just a few more of these. This is a George Gershwin song sung by Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald, and we've updated it to I Ship You.
Oh.
I Ship You.
So okay, a lot of Gen Z.
Gen Z kind of chipping yourself, putting two fictional characters together in the romantic. I dream about having a relationship with you.
Oh, sir.
Maybe.
It's I Got a Crush on You.
Oh.
Yes, okay. Cole Porter's Let's Do It. Let's Aubergine Aubergine Peach Emoji.
Let's Fall in Love.
Yay.
Yes, sir.
I've got the choice of saying, well, you got a good score, or not a great score, I'm afraid. But I think I'm going to steer clear of both of those and just say, sorry.
Phil, I think it's a disgrace. I'm sorry. You're not fixed, so please don't think that.
I wasn't, Sue.
Phil... Thank you for sharing such a charming and authentic obsession, and I'm sorry for throwing it back in your face with such a complicated game. Now, we've had a lot of fun chatting with Pollard and Wang, a.k.a. the media elite. But before the show, we asked each member of our audience to write down something they are obsessed with. I'm now going to have a chat with a few of the punters that we didn't immediately eject from the building. Louise, are you here? Oh, hi, Louise. Your obsession rhymes with your name, if you're just checking you're the right Louise. Louise, what's your obsession, please?
Febreze!
Oh,
I was going to say Febreze.
Louise, can you remember why you started collecting Febreze?
I think I wrote something like, because it was easy, affordable and smells great.
It was cheap, accessible and smells great. Looking back, I'd moved in with my parents during COVID, so it was definitely a coping mechanism. So the friend you were collecting with, were they collecting Febreze elsewhere?
Yes. So
right.
We would both collect Febreze and then share what we'd found with each other.
And would it be like a Pokemon got needs?
Yeah,
really?
Exactly like that. So Wow. If either of us found any in like an old corner shop they'd since... gone, like, not on the shelves anymore. That would maybe be, like, a rare one.
Forgive my ignorance. How many different flavours of Febreze are there?
I would say at its height, I probably had about 40 different ones.
Wow!
I have gotten over the obsession, though, now. I bought my own house, don't live with my parents anymore, so since then I've slowly worked through them.
A heartening end to a curious tale. And I think we should move now to Lewis. Now, I've got a couple of Lewises in my hand. The Lewis I'm looking for, this is the one whose sort of summary involves the phrase, I have been driving past strangers' houses. Is that... Dear listener, the first applause break of the evening is because Lewis is sat next to Louise. Lewis, do you know Louise?
Yeah, we're a couple.
You're a couple called Lewis and Louise.
Tip of the iceberg, Bill. I should let you have the honour, Lewis. What's your obsession?
I just want to chop wood.
I have been driving past strangers' houses in search of their unwanted logs. I bought the axe before I got any wood. I have only chopped one piece of wood so far. Give me your wood! And I have enjoyed reading that, but it is all in capital letters. You're very different, you and Louise. Your obsessions are different, but also Louise's ability to actually realise your obsession into actual numbers. Whereas, Lewis, you've just got an axe.
My obsession has just begun.
Do you want to tell us very quickly about the axe purchasing process?
Quick one, just off Amazon. Nice looking.
Lovely. The show is overrunning, so we can leave it there. Quick one, just on Amazon. Thanks to our audience for their obsessions. We'll come back to you a little bit later. But I'm dying to know what gets Sue Pollard going, so let's find out. Again, just a fantastic bit of script there. We've already got a pretty clear idea of what gets Sue Pollard going. I would like to say, though, Sue, that I do know some people who are particularly obsessed with you, and it's a WhatsApp group of Swindon Town fans called the London Reds, and that's because you were on an adjacent table when they were watching Lincoln City versus Swindon Town at the Euston Flyer pub on March the 25th, 2007. Do you remember being at the Euston Flyer on March the 25th, 2007?
I think I do remember something like that, because I have frequented several station establishments.
Sue, you've been too generous already on many counts. But what is the obsession that you've formally brought with you to the show today?
My obsession is tomatoes. I bought them in my handbag.
Oh, right.
Those at home won't be able to see this, but I did want to just show you.
Yes, Sue has indeed withdrawn one small and one large tomato from her bag.
Yes. It's also good padding, just in case you've got no...
Sue has put the large tomato down her shirt.
These are emergency tomatoes that you carry around in case a salad doesn't have tomatoes.
Yes, totally, because I don't know what it is, but if anybody does like that kind of food added to their diet...
Two tomatoes.
Yes. More, if there are any. It's just that you're right, absolutely right, Phil. I can't be doing with anything that... So
I've got you a plate of tomatoes here.
Get in! And they're on the vine. Oh, Jeremy... have a smell of them, Phil.
Yeah, sure. Have a smell. Yeah, really fresh.
Can I ask, is it always just the standard two tomatoes, one large, one small, in the bag?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, because I found, in my experience, you know, I just don't know why they don't put tomatoes on it. I really do blame the economy. Yes, I'm sorry. It's not good, is it? Oh, God, I hope I don't get tomatoes shoved through my letterbox now. I probably
You'd
have
love
a
that.
Supply. Yeah, but I know... But...
Do you want to give your address again, just so people know? have you had a tomato today, Sue? Can I?
Oh, yes. I've had four. Yeah, four.
And on that note, we must move on to Sue Pollard's tomato game. Sue, we're going to play a very quick game called Rotten Tomatoes. It's a bit like Higher or Lower. We're going to list some tomato-based films from around the globe, and we want you to tell us if they are rated higher or lower than the previous answer. In keeping with the theme, all answers have, of course, come from IMDb. If you're right, Sue, you will hear this.
It's taste of tomatoes, sweet tomatoes, fresh tomatoes.
And if you're wrong, you'll hear this.
Where's that tomato gone? Look, it's rotten!
Sue, we're going to crack through a few quick tomato-based films, and we'll start with Daft, a movie about dogs, androids, firemen and tomatoes, a 1999 video collection by electronic music duo Daft Punk. That scored 8.1 out of 10 on IMDb. So our next film is Mafia and Red Tomatoes, an Italian comedy about people trying to farm on land owned by a local mafia boss. Did this film receive a rating higher or lower than 8.1?
I would say it got to 8.7.
Where's that tomato gone? Look, it's rotten!
No, I'm afraid it scored lower with 6.3. Next, we move to 1988's... Come back, crooners, all is forgiven. Next, we have 1988's Return of the Killer Tomatoes being one of George Clooney's first roles. Did that score higher or lower than 6.3 on IMDb?
I haven't seen many films.
It's hard to believe that there was a point in rehearsal where we said, well, the chat about tomatoes might not go anywhere, but we've got the game for afterwards. Nonetheless, Sue, it was a pleasure. Thank you for sharing your obsession. Sue Pollard, everybody! Now, before we welcome our very obsessed person, let's just chat to a couple more people in the audience. First up is Matt here. Hello, Matt. What or who is your obsession, Matt?
My obsession is Sue Pollard coming to the Euston Flyer in 2007.
Yeah!
I'm delighted to say that you're here. I'd give you a kiss, but you're too far away. Do you want to meet me halfway?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, come on, let's. If you don't mind that, just a slight interruption, he's very nice. And also, a bonus, not ugly.
It's going to be a busy night on the London Reds WhatsApp group. Now we come to the part of the show where I welcome our special VOP guest, and that stands for Very Obsessed Person. It's someone whose obsession isn't just a hobby, it's become a job and the thing that shapes their entire life. So please, would everyone go wild and welcome to the stage, Adam Tango Holland! Yay! Adam, could you tell us what is your obsession?
Well, my obsession is running.
Extreme endurance running to a world record-breaking degree. Is that correct?
Pretty much, yeah.
We are in the presence of greatness. Adam, you completed 100 marathons when you were 23. Gasps in the audience. For balance, when Phil and I were 23, we were doing our debut shows at the Edinburgh Festival and Sue was coming second to a singing Jack Russell on Opportunity Knocks. Adam, could you tell us a little bit about the 100 marathons when you were 23 and indeed the many marathons since?
Well, I just got into it because a friend of mine said he wanted to do 100 before he was 60, I think it was. And at the time, I'd only done six.
And he wanted to do 100 before he was 60?
Yeah.
And so you casually did 100 by the time you were 23?
Yeah. There's a big club called the 100 Marathon Club, and a lot of people try to aim to get into that club, and that was something he wanted to do, and he hasn't yet.
Oh, right. Well, I hope you're listening, you failure. And at this year's London Marathon, you helped the British Paralympian gold medalist Richard Whitehead break his own world record, and you were his pace setter, is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
So we're looking at, or listening to, a bloody good guy. You also recently published a Facebook status saying, "Been going through and sorting out my medal collection, as I will need to downsize."
They've gone to a good cause.
Hey, that's what you've given them to your friend who hasn't done the marathons. Adam, what's quite astonishing is, as well as all of this, you are also a world record holder in a completely different domain. Is that correct?
I'm guessing you're talking about Candy Crush.
Yes. Imagine having to guess what the thing you're a world record holder is.
Well, it's not a world record. I was the UK champion.
I do apologise. What country's champions defeated you at the World Series?
Well, they never did a World One during that time, which was annoying, because I would love to have had a go.
During that time, what, when you were at sort of peak crushing?
Yeah.
So now, if there was a World Championship, you'd be out of practice.
Yeah, I'll be in the middle somewhere.
But you've spent much of your adult life doing marathons or practicing Candy Crush.
Pretty much.
And you've got two children. Do you see them?
I do. Just in between.
We were very excited, Adam, to try and impress you by all playing Candy Crush backstage. Now, is it correct, Phil and Sue, we'd never played Candy Crush?
I think I played once years ago.
Okay, well, that's very honest of you to disclose that, Phil and Sue.
I'm so sorry.
I didn't even know what it is.
Right.
So
I went first and got the quite impressive seeming score of 46,940. But that was then dwarfed by Phil's 52,780. And then Sue got 10. Adam, I think you've lived a hugely impressive life on the running and the crushing front. I'm sure your wife and your children and the many members of your running club must be very proud. Thank you very much for coming on Sessions to tell us about it. Adam Tango Holland, everybody. Well, we've heard about all sorts of obsessions today, but only one obsessive can be crowned my obsessive of the week and walk off with the coveted obsessions baseball cap and get the chance to read out the credits. Now, we've had some fantastic contributions from the audience, and of course, one of the obsessives did get a hug and a looks-based compliment from Sue Pollard. But I do think the most democratic thing to do would be to give the cap to a household where it might be shared. So may I present the obsessed cap to Louise of the Febreze and her housemate Lewis, who has been driving past strangers' houses in search of their unwanted logs. Louise and Lewis, everybody! Thank you to our wonderful audience. Thank you to my guests, Phil Wang, Sue Pollard and Adam Tango Holland. I'll leave you with some parting wisdom. An apple a day keeps the doctor away, and a tomato a day turns you into an absolute raving lunatic. I've been Ivo Graham. Thank you very much, everybody, and goodbye!
Ivo Graham's Obsessions was hosted by Ivo Graham, featuring Phil Wang, Sue Pollard and Adam Tango Holland. It was written by Ivo Graham and Matthew Crosby, with additional material by Sharon Wanjohi and Peter Talouche. The producer was Gwyn Rhys-Davies, and it was a BBC Studios audio production for Radio 4.
There's more comedy later tonight on Radio 4. At 11 o'clock, the spoof podcaster Alistair Green will be exploring another big idea before toxic masculinity leads Jazz Emu down a dangerous path in Jazz Emu, The Sound of Us, at 11:15.
When someone says ancient Greece, you might think of its gods, mythology, or epic battles. But what was it actually like to live as an ancient Greek?
The Athenians were a hugely litigious lot. They're always in and out of court, as far as we can see.
I'll be uncovering five stories of fascinating real lives from the streets of ancient Greece.
She kind of says, do to me what you want, you know, see if I care.
Helped by historians and guests, including Martin Scorsese.
He is a gangster, and he knows how to move it.
Being Greek, with me, Mary Beard. Starts next Tuesday morning at 9 on Radio 4.